Howdy, guys. It's time for another Captain Josh Olive and Fish and Frank show. We are here hanging out in the studio in the back of Fish and Frank's, way back here in the crusty old bait shop where it smells like dead shrimp, and that's the way we like it. We are going to talk today.
Fishy.
Yes, that was cool. I don't know where that came from, but I'm not on the controls. We are going to talk today about one of the most basic tools that every fisherman needs. It's very difficult to go fishing without one. We're talking about fishing rods. And I know that there's a whole stack of fishing rods here in this shop and in most other of the good local tackle shops that you go to. I mean, from where I'm sitting, I can probably see 150, and there's another 150, 200 more that are out of my line of sight. There's a reason that there are so many different rods here in the store.
That's the sound you want to hear right there. That's what we're looking for. That's the intonation of the sound.
Screaming drags.
Okay.
Okay. So let's talk a little bit about fishing rods because, you know, when I first started fishing, I just used whatever rod was handed to me. And then later on, I picked rods based on such crazy things as this one has nice colors. I like the way this one matches up with the reel and it goes well together. I really had no idea what in the world I was looking for. And then later on, as I started to gather and accumulate more tackle, as fishermen do, I started to realize there's differences between these rods. You know, they're not all made the same.
That's okay. You're talking, and I'm changing microphones. So go
ahead.
All
right. Well, go ahead. Continue to change your microphones out. Well, we were getting to the point where I was about to ask you a question, though. So I'd like you to get your microphone changed so that we can discuss this like civilized adults. I mean, do whatever you need to do, for crying out loud. So.
All right. You want me to discuss things as a civilized adult, and you know me?
Yeah. Well, I was hoping with this topic that we could probably talk about it that way.
Everybody starts out the same way. You get a rod because you pick it up, and thanks, man. Customer's saying hi. It's a wonderful thing about doing the show in the office. You get people come in and go out. It's kind of cool.
All the interruptions. The wonderful, wonderful interruptions.
Yeah, but some of them are awesome.
That's what I'm saying.
We pick rods by sometimes the way they look, and guys won't admit that. They walk down the rack, go, wow, that one looks kind of neat. That one's interesting. And I don't know. And I think a lot of it's recommendation by friends. You know, you got a buddy who fishes, and so you kind of think, well, if it's good for him, it'd be good for me. Or you see advertising. And one of the hard things to remind people is names on rods is something somebody painted on there. Action, weight class, line class, that's just stuff people paint on the rods. There is no standard for what's a 6 to 12 or an 8 to 17 or medium heavy or light. Every manufacturer decides that for themselves. And then they decide, like, say, and I know a couple of the names, or Star. Let's look Star. Star Aerial, medium. And an aerial is different than a stellar light, which is different than a plasma, which is different than a Seagis. They're all kind of the same, but they're not really
the same at all. They're nothing the same. And if you're used to one particular rod and one particular model and you say, okay, I really love this rod that I have, and it says it's got an extra fast action, and it says that it's rated for 8 to 17 pound line, and it says that it's a medium heavy, and it's a 7 foot 6 inch rod, I'm going to go in, I'm going to find one of these rods that says all the same things, and it's going to feel the same. It's nothing like that at all.
No.
Not even close.
In a lot of instances. And I think the biggest thing that... let's take Redbone for instance. Redbone rods came out and they were pretty much awesome. We carried them for a long time. Sold literally thousands of them. And then, without telling anybody, they changed the blank, making the rod completely different. It was still painted to look the same. And it's still the same name on it, still said the same thing, but it was a completely different rod. Even though it all said exactly the same and kind of looked the same, but the blank was actually a lot different. Didn't bend the same way, didn't react the same way to a fish. And then one day they go out of business. And they're just gone, well, I like Redbone. Well, that's fine, but when they're not there, so what you need to do is feel the action. You just close your eyes, and like when you come in, I put weights on them and stuff like that. But even if you bring the rod in you want to replicate, we can find one. But the thing you have to understand is it might not say the same thing. It could be a different color. I know one rod manufacturer that we sold so many of their rods for offshore that one of the real manufacturers just couldn't stand it. So they have that company making rods for them, painted a different color with different guides on it, but basically it's the exact same rod.
Right.
It's even being made in the same factory.
Because
the guy says, well, I don't want that one because that has this name on it. I want this name. No, they're the same rod. I tell people, choose it. Do you like the yellow one or do you like the black one?
Right, because it's the same blank. And that's the key to looking at the rods this way is let's break it down into the component parts, because a lot of people don't really get what goes into building a rod in the first place. You know, guides, yeah, I mean, you get a rod that has good quality guides on it. You don't want junky guides on there,
right,
but nobody makes their own guides.
Let's do the Fuji tags.
Yes.
And it's not that Fuji doesn't make crappy guides, lousy guides. Fuji makes some of the worst guides in the industry, but they also make the best. When you see the Fuji tag on there, that's designating that that manufacturer bought upgraded guides. He spent a lot more money. Whoever the manufacturer is spent more money on those guides. They're much less likely to split. In Florida, we have a huge problem with expansion and contraction of metals.
Which you find out when you store your rods in the garage, like most people do, where you have massive temperature swings. You know, put a thermometer in your garage and see what the temperature range is. You know, on a hot summer day with that thing closed up, it's 140 degrees in there. And then you get to these wintry nights that we just had a few of, it might have dropped down to the 40s.
Let's just stay on a 24-hour period. In a 24-hour period, what's very likely to happen in a garage, in a truck, in a car, in a shed, is by 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's 130, 140 degrees. Not uncommon. Now, that night, it drops down into, say, 68 degrees. So, 78, 98.
Right, you got 65 degrees worth of contraction. That's a lot of stress on that metal.
It's a lot of expansion during the beginning of the day.
Right.
And now, let's say you have a ceramic insert in there. Now, ceramic is glass. It does not expand or contract. So during the day, that metal's getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It's trying to go out away from it. Then it goes, hits that, starts falling down, you know, 10 degrees. That metal starts to contract. Ceramic doesn't contract. So it hits a certain point and it pops the weld. The only way to get that little ceramic insert in there is there's a little piece of metal wrapped around the ceramic and welded together, little spot weld. Well, you know how tiny and thin that metal is. Imagine how tiny and thin the spot weld is.
Yeah.
So it starts to contract, hits that ceramic, and just pops apart. And you'll see where the metal was just split. And the ceramic guide falls out. Well, now once that ceramic's out, or the insert, let's call it, it starts cutting your line up. And you cannot believe, if you have a little chip, just a chip in the ceramic, and you go to cast, it will cut your line up. And then as you reel it in, it starts cutting the line up. And I use 10 to 20 pound braid to test to see if the guides are accurate. And Austin showed me this because I used a Q-tip all my life. Run the Q-tip around, and if it got fuzzier as you ran it around there, you could tell it was being pulled. But with the 10-pound test braid, you simply, kind of like you're flossing your teeth, and just go around the circle, and all of a sudden, bink, it cuts. And a little tiny chip that you can't see, you cannot see it. It's too, you know, I'm looking at it with my, you know, cheater readers on. I should be able to see it.
Right. Well, you got 60-year-old eyes, what can I tell
you? So
the key to that method, though, is making sure that you hold that braid taut, because I've had people who've done the same thing and they're not really holding the line tight enough to get that effect out of it, and they're not seeing the problems. And if you look closer and you hold the line tight, maybe you do have a chip in there. And you know, that goes back to one of my early experiences with using braid, and one of the reasons that I thought initially this stuff is terrible, because I was using braid with a rod that was a few years older. It didn't have the, back in those days, way long time ago, they didn't have the braid safe guides. So, you know, you might consider them a little bit more chafe prone with your braid. And I had a crack in my footer guide, the closest one to the reel. And I didn't realize that crack was there. And it was slicing up my line. And the line was fuzzing out and getting abraded away. And every time I would go to catch a good size fish, it would break. And I thought, this stuff is crap. This is 20-pound test braided line that's supposed to be the best thing since ever as far as fishing goes. And here, I can't bring in a 5-pound fish because my line breaks every time.
Yep.
But that was why. It had nothing to do with the line. It had everything to do with the fact that my equipment was broken and I didn't realize it.
Well, kind of on the same vein, when braided line first came out, it was rough. And it would literally cut through stuff. It has never, ever been able to cut through a ceramic guide, by the way. People thought they had ceramic guides, but they were hard plastic guides.
Yeah.
A lot of the inexpensive rods, and even especially a lot of the ugly sticks and rods, especially in that price range, it looked like it was ceramic glass inserts. And what it was a hardened plastic insert. And with monofilament, it was great because it was inexpensive to put in. It held up just fine. But as soon as that braid hit it, it started cutting right through that hardened plastic.
Yep.
People mistook that for a ceramic guide. It is impossible for line like that to cut through glass. And glass just isn't cut.
If you look at some of the compounds that they use in these guide inserts nowadays, you know, for a few years it was you'd look at them, it would say ALO2, aluminum oxide, and that was the best stuff. And then there was the SiC guides with the silicon carbide, and that was the best stuff. And there were a couple other different compounds. And, you know, some manufacturers have used titanium in the frames to try to convince you that this stuff is going to be better, more durable, more gooder. Okay, well, maybe it is, but realistically, do you need it?
You know what you need? You need a painted guide. And I don't care if they say they're stainless, titanium, whatever. Make sure it's black. Make sure it has a color. Make sure it was painted. That paint's going to give you an extra year to 2 years before you're going to start seeing corrosion. Rods like the Shimano Terramars, they're silver guides. And that little bit of salt gets stuck right by where the rod meets the, where the eye meets the rod in that little bit of epoxy there. Or it gets lodged in between where the insert is and the frame. And you start seeing these brown marks, these stains. And because there's a lot of different grades of stainless. But a painted guide is going to give you at least another year over a non-painted guide. Because it's got to get through the paint first.
Right.
Painted guides, whether it's an inexpensive guide or an expensive guide, the salt, everything has to penetrate the paint. Usually it won't. It has to wait for it to get a chip in the paint before it can start working on the metals of the eye itself. That's a key thing that I found out. I was having rods made, and it looked so beautiful with the silver guides, and I thought, okay, I'm paying for stainless, and I found out it's some kind of Arabic stainless where if you put it in the middle of the desert during the day and it doesn't rust, they call it stainless.
Stainless steel.
Yes. So it was... Basically, they were just garbage guides. But the ones that I bought, same price, same guides, but they weren't stainless, but they had paint on them, black paint or whatever. They held up fine. They lasted 3 years or 4 years, as much as you would expect out of an inexpensive rod. And it was awesome. Now, one that's doing really good is the Ugly Stick. Because of the new blanks they have, and now they have a... metal on metal insert eye on them. The blanks are kind of good. They're heavy and they're tough. If you're going to appear to fish for bait, you know, fish with bait, what do? You set your rods down. Talking about rods a little bit here. So
that's what most people do anyway.
But you set it down and you talk to your friends or you look around or you throw a lure with another rod. So what you want is a rod that can fall down and not get hurt. That Ugly Sticks are great for that. And now their new guide system, it's metal on metal. It's a metal frame with the same materials for the guide. And it's got kind of a gray, I don't know if you'd call it powder coating. It's just, it's...
It's finished, but I don't think it's powder coated.
It reminds me of that stuff they used to make the pans out of, you know, that enamel stuff.
Right.
And it seems to be holding up really well. I don't know of any of them that are rusting or falling apart. And it's impossible for the insert to come out.
Because it avoids the problem of metal contraction expansion, since it's all metal. So it all expands, it all contracts. And if it's made of the same metal, it expands and contracts at about the same rate. No problems with that stuff happening. Mm. Now, I have seen some people who don't want to buy those because they say, oh, well, this metal on the inside is going to be too rough up against my line. Well, not like that. It's not. I mean, if you took some sandpaper to it, then maybe. If you let it start to rust, then maybe. But, you know,
Wipe it off for a while,
it's going to be fine. And if you take good care of your rod and, you know, put a little bit of some kind of anti-corrosion, maybe a little bit of on there every now and then, you won't have that problem.
Literally all it takes is a little bit of a paper towel and, like you say, some Getsum or some type of oil that won't detract from your fishing, and you wipe it around the insert. If you like real magic, that's not bad. WD-40 is a fish attractant as well as a cleaner, not much of a lubricant, but it's a great cleaner. Getsum is good. I take a little bit of a paper towel and just wipe the inside of it, spray some on the paper towel, rub it around the inside of your guides or pass it through with a small cloth. You know, cloth is better than a paper towel because you can actually, you know, like run it through the guide, you know, the way the cartoon people would run a cloth in one ear and out the other and rub it back and forth.
What do you mean cartoon people?
Well, I know some of us do that, but I wasn't.
I do that regularly.
So anyway, it's going back to rod blanks. You've got parabolic blanks. You've got fast taper blanks. You've got long, short, heavy. You have all these different types of blanks. And how do you pick the one that's right for you?
Well, and now we're just right now focusing on the way that they actually function and feel, not the materials that they're made from.
Okay.
So, well, I mean, that's another factor, too, is do you want a graphite blank? Do you want a carbon blank? Do you want a fiberglass blank? Do you want a composite blank? And what do those things even mean? But that's fine. We can get to that. Let's talk about your parabolic bends.
All right. What, to me, I'm going to jump your topic a little bit, but...
of course you are.
Well, otherwise I'll forget. I had the thought, and I was going to forget it. I'm almost forgotten it now. Inside the harbor... fishing for snook, redfish, 10 to 20 pound class spinning rod or lighter, I want a wonderful graphite. I want the, like the Star Seagis. I like a couple of the Reaper blanks. What I want is a very heavy butt section going to a very light tip, fast taper, but lots of graphite. I want it light. I want it wonderful. But when I get out in the Gulf, I want E-glass, T-glass, fiberglass. I don't want any of these graphite rods. I don't trust them, because if you get pulling on a big fish, the graphite is kind of like a brandy snifter. You know, you have that beautiful glass, it's all hand blown, you've got the cognac in the bottom and you're swirling it around and you're taking sips out of it and you kind of coddle the glass because it feels so good in your hand. But the glass rods, the E-glass, T-glass, fiberglass, all these glass rods, that's like my coffee mug in the morning. You know, I've got one of those Fish and Frank coffee mugs, and I'm banging on the table to make a point, or if I take it in and out of the truck and it falls down, I might get a chip in it, but it doesn't break. And
because it's overbuilt. It's more solid than it needs to be, so it lasts and lasts.
Well, it doesn't feel as good as the brandy snifter. You know, that brandy snifter, that's that wonderful hand-blown glass. It's so light to hold and just feels so good in your hand. But it's delicate. You have to take a lot better care of it. And in the harbor, you know, with these fish, I do. But out in the Gulf, you're bottom fishing. It's you pull, the fish pulls. Whoever pulls the hardest wins.
It's tug of war.
Yeah.
And you need to be able to win the tug of war.
So I use an $80 rod rather than a $400 rod, because it's going to hold up better. You know, I mean, that's, to me, the simple truth of it.
It makes plain and basic sense, you know. And in that case, you're dealing with older technology. That's why you're looking at an $80 rod versus a $400 rod, because it's simpler to manufacture that. It's older technology, and they don't advertise it like they have to advertise the new stuff.
And the big part about it is there's little or no breakage in the rods. So when you're buying a rod, you're buying the engineering and design, because an engineer probably, he has to sit and work for weeks or months to figure out how to build this rod. I mean, a lot of these rods, especially when you're dealing with these materials, the actual engineering and design of not only the rod, but how you're going to make it. Does it come off a mandrel? Is it a solid blank? If it's a hollow blank, they've got to make a long steel rod, kind of like a giant needle, and they put it on a machine, and then they wrap the fiberglass on, then they got to coat it and wrap or the graphite, and the graphite's usually put on little tiny strips, and it's rolled on, kind of like if you put a string and wrapped it around your finger, just overlapping it a little bit all the way up, little piece of tape going up that's actually made out of graphite. And then they coat that. And the problem with that is Ugly Stick, when they were first doing these graphite overlap, they found that it was brittle. And you really couldn't bend it and get it to do stuff. But if you use fiberglass, it was so whippy, it was like a noodle. So what Ugly Stick did was designed a very small mandrel and ran graphite over that on the very first layer to make it stiff. Then they took fiberglass in the strips and started spinning it, and it rolls on, like I said, like you'd wrap a string around from the base of your finger out to the end of your finger. And that fiberglass was on there. Where the problem comes in and rods start to break is during the sanding process. These rods actually have a sanded finish, because Ugly Sticks didn't break because they were never sanded. They put an epoxy coating over the top of the whole thing, or kind of a, not epoxy, but a fiberglass rosin finish over the whole rod to seal in all the little things that would stick you and cut you because the fiberglass was so rough. Without sanding the blank, if there was less chance of failure. And the graphite on the inside of the rod with the fiberglass on the outside, if that cracked, it didn't make any difference. So the rod bent way over, the graphite inside all cracked and broke apart, but it still kept the rod stiff. The fiberglass was holding it where it was all supposed together. To be.
Yep. And that's how they legitimately came by that name, because man, did that make an ugly rod.
It was just unfinished. So,
but it worked. It did the job as far as not being breakable.
No.
And that's where composite rods get their start, because it's made of multiple different materials like that.
Right. But if you take a sander and that machine's going back and forth, up and down that rod blank, let's say it gets a little piece of dust in the mechanism and pauses for just a second, it burns a hole in that blank pausing it, because it's going very high speeds. And if it's not a perfect end-to-end run with it, it'll literally burn a spot on the blank, and that's where they'll fail. And we get rods in that, I guess about 8 years ago, oh, maybe 12 years ago, Star Stellar Lights, we had a 6-14. You sell it to somebody, they take it out. As soon as they catch a fish, the top quarter of the rod would fall off. I mean, just ploop, pop right off. The blank got burnt, and they didn't notice the sander had a problem. And every one of them did the same thing. Well, we went through those, replaced them, and went on, but they fixed the sander. But that belt had a little defect in the belt where it was running the sander back and forth.
And that's all it takes when you're dealing with this high-tech material like that. Little tiny hitch in your get-along like that will destroy the rod. And that's why rods come with warranties on them, because they know that there's going to be a certain number of these that are going to be defective because of something that happens at the factory or something that happens in shipping. They are fragile things.
Well, I was outside teaching a kid how to throw a bait caster the other day. He came in. He was one of those kids that, no, I'm good. And I got him out back. I said, no, I got to teach you how to use this. Otherwise, it's going to go in the closet. You're never going to take it out again. Take him out in the parking lot. And I said, now depress the thumb bar to release this, to release the line spool. What thumb bar? You're right. You don't need me.
He knew
me.
What he was doing.
Yeah, you don't need me. All right. So what happens is I'm out there, and I go to cast the rod, and we've been doing some sidearm cast. No big deal. I went to do an overhand cast because he was getting really good at the sidearm cast. And I said, okay, I'm going to show you how to do an overhand. I took the rod and went to throw it, and the rod snapped in half.
Obvious, just in the middle of a cast.
Obvious defect in it, but every manufacturer should have the first fish warranty, because you don't know if it's even going to hold up until you take it out, cast it. When you catch your first fish, you know if the rod's okay or not. And you might have 1,000 rods that are perfect, and then two or three could have a defect from somewhere in the manufacturing that somebody didn't catch, and it's not visible. The only way to know it is put a load on it. When we drop the weights on the rods here, all of a sudden, crack, and the rod hits the ceiling. You're like, yeah, well, better in here than out there.
Yep, for sure. And, you know, that's why it's important to have a good warranty on a rod that you're buying. And for me personally, if I'm dealing with somebody who wants to buy a rod, I always strongly recommend getting one that you can get an over-the-counter warranty on. Because if you have to send your rod back to the manufacturer yourself, it's just a huge pain to deal with. You know, you got to box it up. Sometimes they want you to break it up into a bunch of pieces. Now they got to send one back to you.
Well, that's the good part, when they want you to send it back whole.
Yeah, because that's expensive.
Yeah, if they will allow you to cut it up and ship it back, not bad. But what if you got to ship back out of a 7.5-foot rod, you got to ship back 6'8"? That's an expensive thing. Where do you get the container? So I think you're kind of on with that. But
well, and the other thing, too, is that then they're going to ship a rod back to you. And I don't want one rod coming back to me. I want to buy a rod in a tackle store where a bunch of them came in together. And that seems to me that they're less likely to be damaged because they package them better when they're in groups. I've seen how they package single rods and how they get handled by the guys who are carrying them.
Yeah, the FedEx, UPS, post office guys. There is not one of those better than the other ones.
It all depends
upon who's doing it. The individual, not the company, but the individual.
I've talked to enough people who've had that kind of experience where they had to send a rod back, and they get the rod back to the manufacturer, and it's broken in the box when they go to open it. So they got to send it back again and get another one. I don't need those kind of headaches in my life, and I don't recommend other people have them either. Get an over-the-counter warranty rod.
Yeah, well, you know, but not everybody wants it. People are all into brand labels nowadays.
I get that, and that's cool. If you're into your brand label, that's fine, but suffer the consequences if you
want to be. I was just looking at my shoes to try and see if I had a brand on them. I didn't even think they come with a brand. I was just wondering, you know, I thought, well, maybe, you know, did you get down to the Big Boy Toys Expo?
I did not.
All right. There was two things down there that I saw that was amazing. There was some guy, Soka or Socha or something, like, I don't know, builds motorcycles. And, I mean, these things, they literally sat down on the ground, a big tailpiece that sits flat, and the front went down. And the motorcycle, the front tire was like 28 inches high. And the whole thing, when you sat on it, then it lifted up and off you would go. And when you wanted to stop, you'd set it back on the ground. But it was absolutely amazing. And an old Toyota pickup truck down there. Out of all the things there, they were the coolest things out of everything we saw. And I have no idea where I was going with it because I knew where I was going in the beginning.
I don't either. I just saw you chasing a squirrel, and I figured, well, I'll wait until he's bored with it and he'll
come
back.
What was I saying when I started that?
I thought we were going to talk about parabolic curves and the different kind of bends that are in rods.
So you're going way back. I was talking right before I did the sentence.
But I'm trying to get you back on track.
Yeah, I know, but I would like to go right back to the thought I had, and it's gone now. God.
Probably for the best.
Well, you know, I mean, sometimes those things happen. Whoa, what the heck was that?
I don't know what that was supposed to be.
Oh, my God.
Hurt my ears a little bit, I can tell you that.
Sorry, boys and girls. Even the crowd's booing me
They
now.
Should boo you for that.
Even the crowd's booing
that
me.
That was very rude and harsh.
Yeah, I don't know what the heck happened there.
Okay.
Anyway, parabolic rods are rods that bend evenly or relatively evenly from the handle all the way to the tip. Fast taper rods, every inch you pull down on the tip is increasing pressure. Parabolic rods are great for softmouth fish like sea trout, salmon, things like that, where you don't want a hard hook set on them, especially dealing with bait popping corks where you're literally going to rip it out of their mouth. But I'm not... to me, they're an open water rod. I know I don't have the control I have with a fast taper tip.
No, of course
structure.
You don't. I mean, if you've got a big floppy noodle in your hand, it's much harder to steer the fish where you want them to go. Now, for me personally, and this may not apply to everybody,
but I think parabolic rods are great for open water because you have that pull curve on them. And I think open water fishing, I think they're good. And they help eliminate ripping the hook out of fish's mouths. Like especially fish like sea trout and crappie, things like that with softer mouths.
Right. And I don't know what it is about trout, but I don't really have problems with ripping hooks out of their faces. I know other people do, and I use mostly pretty fast rods. But where I like a rod with a more parabolic curve is when I'm using live or natural bait. Because I have a tendency, and maybe it's just a flaw in my cast, I don't know, to snap baits off when I'm using natural baits, if I'm using a rod that has a faster tip, because I get that good snapping action like I get with a soft plastic or a topwater, and next thing I know, I'm casting a bare jig head and my shrimp is behind me.
And you look and you see that shrimp or that white bait go right up right at the edge of the mangroves and bounce right underneath the trees, and you say, man, that had been a perfect catch if that bait just had a leash on it, if he was still hooked up to my leash, you know. And some of the, you know, I'll be out there casting and the bait just travels so far, and the person standing next to me goes, wow, that's an amazing cast. I've never seen anybody cast that far. I'm like, yeah, imagine what it'd be if the hook was still in it, you know?
Yeah, so I'm glad that I'm not the only one that that happens to. But that's what I use my slower, more parabolic curve rods for, is not necessarily for open water fishing, but for fishing with natural baits. And I don't fish with natural baits all that often. I generally prefer artificials. So most of my rods are going to have faster tips on them.
I do have some softer action rods now, and it depends upon what aspect of fishing I'm in, because most of the glass rods that I have aren't as tip action as people would think they are, because I want heavy pull. I want it to give me a little bit, a lot of help lifting, but I don't want it to kick back and give me black and blue marks and push back into my stomach much, because I'm an old guy. I ain't got a real strong stomach anymore. And if you have a really hard action rod, as the fish pulls on the tip of it, your hand becomes the fulcrum. It's the sawhorse on the plank of the teeter-totter, your hand is. And what happens to the one end kicks back to the other end. So I use a softer parabolic rod or lighter tip action when I'm in the Gulf bottom fishing, because I want that tip to be able to bounce up and down a bit, the rod bending up and down, without transposing that pressure back into my stomach. When I'm really holding on a big fish, I don't want it, my hand holding and then it trying to lift my stomach up, you know, past my throat. I want the rod to take up some of that shock, act
right
as a shock absorber as well as a pulling mechanism.
And the type of rods that are great for that type of fishing, and what I use those types of rods for, is for trolling. You know, I like to have that softer tip. It's got plenty of stiffness to the butt, but a soft, bouncy tip that is going to absorb a lot of that shock. And for me, that's more of a trolling rod than a bottom fishing rod, but I could certainly see how an older guy like you might want to use that.
And I'm kind of the opposite. My trolling rods, I like the fast tips on them, because I want the tip to bend a little bit, but I want the rod to stay pretty straight, because let's say I'm working a crankbait with a lip on it. I want to see the tip bouncing as the lure digs into the water. The lip on it, it can't go straight through the water, just can't drag. So it's got to deflect that pressure off, and it does that by going side to side. So as that lure is going side to side, that's pulling my rod tip, bouncing it up and down, up and down, up and down. So I want that tip to curl over and be able to bounce with the side-to-side action of the lure, letting me know everything's good. And then if I get a fish on it, it pulls it down, it pops it up. So I like more the fast tapers trolling with the lighter lures. My heavier lures, I'm using, like you say, more of the parabolics, heavy action parabolics, so that they're bent over, they get the fish on it, and it can absorb that pressure better. But on my lighter trolling stuff, I like the fast taper.
Right. Well, and maybe that's how I'm trolling a lot of the time. I like to troll those big lipped plugs. So trolling those bigger, heavier plugs, that's my preference for a softer rod there. If I'm trolling something small and light, like if I'm trolling for Spanish mackerel, then I'm usually using one of my inshore rods, which is going to be a faster tip anyway.
Okay, so without being on the same page, we actually ended up on the same page.
Which is,
I would almost say that way,
interesting sort of kind of how that happens sometimes.
Yeah, I'm not sure it's interesting, but at least it happened.
Well, and it happens more often than not. I don't know what that was either.
I don't know what that is. There's all these things going
haunted
on here.
Studio.
All right. Anyway. Let's see. All right. You know, it's hard going through parabolic rods and fast taper tips and all that. And there's just a lot about fishing poles that makes it really tough. But let me do something just a little different. I've got a map chart type thing here. And what I'm looking at is the Three Sisters area, or as it says on this one, Hogan's Key, H-O-A-G-E-N, right out by Boca Grande. If you go from Boca Grande Pass, you go north up, and you're going to see a pretty good-sized bay and a big finger sticking out. That's what we actually call the Three Sisters. I don't think it's... What is this?
Three Sisters is the peninsula island that's not actually labeled, right next to marker 6 there.
Yeah. Now... Is there a chart on the back here?
There is not. It's naked on the back. What? Naked and plain white.
Hey, Robert. Hang on a minute. All right, we just had a little mix-up with our charts here. Let's see. We were talking about Three Sisters, and what I want to do is delve into... I'm going to go there, and I'm going to bottom bounce a jig for redfish, and... I'm going to look for like redfish and trout in that area. What would be the rod that you, and specifically, what rod would you like to use do that there with?
Specifically, what rod am I going to do that with?
Yeah, what would you like? What specific rod?
Okay, well, since we're going to bottom bounce some jigs, I'm going to go with a Star Stellar Light and probably 8 to 17, 7 or 7 foot 6. Either one would work for me as long as it's got the split butt on it.
Okay, now... 7 foot six, you get a little more distance out of, and when
it's
you fish,
nice to have a little bit of extra distance
when you fish Three Sisters. I'm historically hanging back, so I'm gonna go with you on the 7'6". Your Stellar Light 8 to 17. Now the 8 to 17 is pretty thick, does have a nice light tip on it, allow you to get up and make the bounces. Why the split grip?
The split grip because it's got a longer butt on it, and I got long monkey arms. And having that longer grip on it, the longer butt allows me to bounce it off of my arm. And when I can bounce it off of my forearm as I'm doing my twitches, then I have less fatigue as I work the lure. Because I'm figuring I'm probably going to be making lots and lots of casts when I'm out there artificials fishing. So anything that you can do to lessen fatigue is great. And that's one reason why I like those Stellar Lights. They're tough, but they're light in weight. And pair it up with a nice lightweight reel, and you've got a killer combo that you can throw artificials with all day long.
And now, I like 10 to 15 pound test braid there. I'm going to say I'm going to cap the height at 15 pound test because I want more distance on that rod. I'm dropping down 10 pound, 15 pound test braid to give me more distance there. Longer rod, lighter line, smaller reels, so that I can reach out farther.
Yep, and I'll use 10 pound for the exact same reason. You know, you generally don't need anything heavier than that in this kind of an area. It's fairly open over there, so once you tie into a fish, he's not going to take you into a lot of structure and break you off. You can give the fish a chance to run around a little bit. If you want to have a lot more fun, you can go to a little bit lighter rod. The reason that I don't specifically is because, especially in that area, we sometimes see some tarpon hanging out. I've seen cobia across that flat, and I want to have, you know, at least a few minutes to play with them before I run out of line.
Right. I would actually, to me there, if I was going to go into Star, it would be a Aegis, but it would be a 6 to 14. As far as older reels go, it could have been anything out of the newer choices right now. Possibly a CI4 from Shimano, but I would probably go with the Conflict 2 and save the money. A lot less money within a half ounce or so of the same weight. But I would be using a 2000 on a 7.5 foot Aegis, 6 to 14 pound, because I like a little more action.
And a little more action is a good thing. Now, if you had given me a different lure, I might have agreed with you on going with the Aegis. Like if you gave me a topwater, I really like the way that Aegis makes a topwater move.
Okay. Now, I'm going to switch gears, and I'm going to go to Cape Hayes and behind the sandbar in Cape Hayes. Not out on the Cape Hayes sandbar itself, but from the shore, you have a trough area that goes along out to that sandbar. What rod would you want for there?
Well, you got a lot of different target fish in that kind of an area, so you got to be a little bit more specific.
Well, you're
if
going
you
there and you don't know what you're going to catch. What's the rod that you're going to go find out what's in that area with?
Okay. If you're going to give me that, then I'm probably going to take a Reaper out there. I have a little bit more flexibility with what I can do with the Reaper. I find that it's got a little bit of an easier action for me for casting natural bait than the Stars do. So I can cast a natural bait, I can cast soft plastic on a jig head just fine, and I'm probably going to bump it up a little bit to a 10 to 20 pound rod, because I don't know exactly what I'm going to run across in there.
All right. For me, between the sandbar and the shoreline, it's not that big an area. So I'm going to bump down to a 6.5 foot. I would go with like a Stellar Light, 6.5 foot. Again, I'm going to go to the 6 to 14, maybe an 8 to 17. If I was going to be truthful, the 8 to 17 is probably a better one to look around with because you can handle more fish with it. But I'm going to go all the way down to 6.5 foot because I don't have to make long cast. I can work both sides, work up to the shoreline, cast up underneath the mangroves. I might take a run up. There's a little creek with a lake on it, and fishing in that creek, I want a 6 foot to 6.5 foot rod. And it wasn't uncommon when I'm really, like when I was tournament fishing there, I would take a 7 foot rod and cut the first foot of it off, retip it to work along those mangroves. Now, sometimes I'll take a 6.5 and get rid of that last 6 inches, drop me down to 6 foot, 5'10", 6 foot, because I'm not casting very far, and I need a lot of power to get those fish back away from the trees. I don't want to play with it. Got roots here, barnacles there, oysters there. I'm going to shorten that rod way up, and literally sometimes I would just take a hacksaw and chop it down to the right length so I could get more power out of it. So
see, that's one reason why I would choose a longer rod in there, though. Not because of my need to be able to cast farther, but because it gives me a little bit more leverage for moving that fish around and keeping him away from the oysters, pulling him away from the mangroves. I find that it's easier to apply opposite pressure with a rod that's a little bit longer, at least in that kind of a situation.
And see, for me, with that little 6 foot rod, I get a hold of the end of that, I got a brace on my forearm. When I pulls, he comes with me. There, it's not like, okay, you know, I'm easing him in or easing him out, especially tournament fishing. I want him coming my way. I'm jumping up to 30, 40 pound braid. I've got the rod set where there's very little give in it. And I'm like, okay, come here now. We're not discussing this.
Right?
This is not a discussion. This is, you're there. Now I want you here right
fish
now.
Fish on a leash.
Yes. So a different aspect of doing it. If I'm out playing and just kind of enjoying myself, it really doesn't matter. But if I'm really have to catch the fish, shorter rod, heavier line, shorter cast, boom, I get them hooked up. I mean, I've literally cast over branches and just brought the fish over the branches with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Well, let's pick another spot inshore where we can
do
something a little bit different. The burnt store flats, not the bar, but the flats on the inside of the bar. You've got grass over there, you've got some mixed potholes, there's a little bit of grass and sand. You're dealing with somewhere between 2 and 4 feet of water. It's a place that you can drift along or you can wade. You're casting. Most of what you're catching is going to be trout. Some of them will be nicer ones. There'll be the occasional redfish over there somewhere in that usually slot size, very occasionally one above, but not huge fish. Lots of fish, and you need a little bit more distance in that area because it does get run around a lot. So there's a lot of boats there. There's a lot of fishermen there. The fish can be a little bit spookier. What would you use in that circumstance?
Okay. Now, I like fishing that area, and it's one of the premier wading spots around. I mean, you see people walking that flats from Burnt Store, see a lot of boats anchored up on the sandbar and guys getting out wading that a lot. I'm going to go to an 8 foot rod. I'm going to go at least an 8 or the longest Reaper I can find in an 8 to 17 ish. I don't want it very heavy, 8 to 17, maybe a 10 to 17. But what I'm looking for, Star makes an 8 foot Stellar Light. I want something like that. I'm going to light my line up as far as I can get it on the braid, maybe 10 pound. It might be one of the instances I might go down to 8. Or even 6, but 10's usually as good a cast as 8 or 6 in braid. There's not enough difference in them to shorten it up. But I'm going to do that real light. I'm going to use actually a bit like a 3000 reel. If it's a pen, I'm going to use a 2000. If it's a Shimano, it's a 3000 because they're the same size.
Mm-hmm.
With the Daiwa, I got to go down to the 25 because that's the Daiwa 25, the Shimano 3, and the Pen 2 are all about the same. And what I'm looking for is to get my arm out as far as possible and throw either the bait or the lure or the jig as far as humanly possible. I'm looking for 80-100 foot cast minimum. As far as I can get it, work my baits back, because the closer you get to the fish, the spookier it's going to be. And if I can, my ideal weighting there is where I can cast over the sandbar on top of it and then cast out in front of it. So I'm looking at being 30, 40 feet from the edge of the sandbar so I can cast up into those potholes on top of the bar, the dark spots. That's where those fish will hide.
Yep.
And then I want to cast in front of me as I walk down and then to the side. So as long a rod, light a line, everything as I can possibly get.
Okay. So for me, I have a combo that I actually use in that area, mostly for wade fishing. And what a lot of people don't know about this spot is that you can actually access this from shore. There's a couple places where you can park a vehicle, you can walk through the woods, and you can...
I have it on my website for them.
Yeah, but a lot of people still
spots.
Don't know about it.
Yeah.
You can walk out on that flat very easily.
No, you can walk out on that flat. Getting to walk
I didn't
out
say
on
you
the
can,
flat.
I didn't
you said
say,
very easily. I'm going, no, no, no. You want to wear your boots and stuff, but you've got to walk from the road through the woods and stuff to get out there. So go there, you know, explore a little bit. Don't just go, okay, I'm going to go fishing, grab a bunch of gear. Take a bottle of water with you, walk down to the water, walk back once so you kind of map out your trail.
Yeah, okay. I'll agree with that. I mean, it is going to be a little bit of a haul. And if you're motion impaired, if you use a cane or if you rely on something else like that, this may not be the fishing spot.
Yeah, if you're in a wheelchair,
you.
No, this is not your spot. But even if you, you know, don't go there by yourself if you have any type of health issues, because no one's going to find you for a while.
I would agree with that. But if you're willing to put up with all the what Frank considers hardships and what I consider fun to get out there and wade out there, then
keeping in mind, boys and girls, he likes lizards and snakes and bugs and he really enjoys all those things. Me, not so much.
Can I tell you about my rod that I use out there?
Yes, please.
Okay, fine. It's a 7.5 foot Stellar Light 4 to 10 pound rod. And it's got a 2000 conflict 2 on it. And it's got 6 pound line that it's spooled up with. And I love that rod out there because most of the time I'm fishing relatively open water. There's not a whole lot of oyster out there. Yeah, there's a couple of sandbars, but there's nothing really for the fish to break me off against. So I can fight those fish on that 4 to 10 rod. I can have a lot of fun with a little 1 pound trout. And you wouldn't even imagine how much fun I can have with an 8 pound redfish out there or with a 10 or 15 pound bonnethead shark.
Now, remind me again, what rod was that?
It's a 7'6" Stellar Light 4 to 10.
Wow, that is light.
It is.
And
it's so much fun.
What reel are you using on it?
It's a Conflict 2000 size.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Yeah, yeah. That actually sounds pretty good, Josh.
It is. It's great. It's a hoot.
Okay, well, all right. I'll agree with you on this one. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah,
it was bound to happen.
I just didn't even think of that rod, but the more you're talking about it, the better that sounds. A lot of action, lots of fun. Take your time landing the fish. I mean, what's the hurry of bringing them in, you know?
Exactly. And, you know in a spot like that, a lot of the fish are going to be smaller. They're going to be trout that most people would just ski back to the boat if they're using something heavier. But you use something light, and it gives you a chance to make those little fish a lot more fun. Now, of course, you always do have the chance to hook into something big and not have any way of controlling it, but hey, that's life.
Yeah, but, you know, years ago I would take, if I had regular customers, I would take my crappie rods with 2 and 4 pound test monofilament on them, little leaders, 5.5 foot rods. I would anchor the boat up, get them all out. We'd walk over to some spots where there was a lot of snook. And we would sit there with those crappie rods catching snook. And it had to be regular customers because you don't want to take people who don't know what they're doing on the water, or ones who will sue you if they step on a stingray. You know what I mean?
And
you
got to
be a little liability careful there. But we would just have a ball. And it was all good until you hit a jack. I don't remember anybody ever getting spooled on a snook. even some of the 30, 32, 34 inches, because you could walk after the fish, you know, and the customer and I would be walking out chasing this fish down on foot, and we would land them, you know, and I would try and run around the outside and scare them back towards the customer. I was younger than I could actually run. But it was a lot of fun. But you hooked a Jack Revelle, and the line was gone, the reels, you know.
Yeah, because he just goes. There's nothing you can do to stop that jack. No. He's just gone.
So, but with the snook, they were kind of got involved in a fight. They weren't running away. They were literally fighting you. I would say snook like this as much as we do. I really believe that. I think they really enjoy it.
Well, let's go with a snook-based scenario for you. Okay?
Okay.
Boca Grande Causeway, fishing right there at the bridge, looking for some of those snook. Now, there's several different bridges there. A lot of people will fish the bunks of the bridge, and they'll fish sometimes the trestle also where the bunks are. But in those types of areas where you see some of those bigger snook hanging out, what rod would you be using there?
As weird as it sounds, that Akuma, I don't remember the name of it, but it's about 70, 80 bucks. Comes in two-piece or one-piece, but it's a 25-pound class. That's an amazing rod for doing stuff like that because it's real heavy, 7 foot, because I want to be able to keep them away from the pilings a little bit more. And if I'm standing on the pier casting or walking a bait, your whole fight happens in such a small area. But that Akuma, that 25-pound class Akuma, that would be literally an amazing bait to have. So, yeah, I'm going to go with that.
Now, I'm going to go with something that's kind of along the same lines but not quite the same rod.
I was hoping you had one because I was sitting there thinking about Placido. Wow, yeah, I used to do that all the time, and I was drawing blanks on the
ugliest rod in the store, the Berkeley Inshore ugly pine aqua green ones.
$60 worth of pure muscle and perfection.
Yes, it is, and that 20-40 in the 7'6", you've got all the leverage that you want. It's got a powerful butt. It's got a beautiful tip action to it. You can do whatever you need to do, and the really cool thing about that rod is, you might get a little bit excited when you're pulling on that snook. You might do something that might hurt a lot of our other rods. You know, we talked a little bit about rod technology earlier and graphite and stuff like that. A lot of those fancier rods are a little bit more brittle, especially out towards the tips. And if you do what's called high sticking a rod, which is forcing the tip to go basically in the opposite direction that the butt is going, basically you're trying to bend it around in a 180-degree angle. The further you get past 90, the more you're putting that tip at risk. With those Berkeley Inshores, I think that might be one of the less likely ones to break when you're bending that tip around.
I think you would really have to work at it.
Yes.
I mean, if you high-sticked it, low-sticked it, whirl-sticked it, I don't care what you do. Those things are amazingly strong. I mean, just literally out of their minds tough. And the reel seat's good. The only thing you have to be careful of with that one, when you're putting the reel on, remember snug is good because the reel, where you put the reel on, is wrapped in cork. And you can literally rip that cork off by cranking it too much. And there's just no reason for it. Snug is as good as crank down hard.
Yeah.
And they hold the reel good. I've sold them for everything from musky fishing to shark fishing to tarpon. I mean, there isn't a fish in the world they won't catch. They're a little heavier than they need to be and literally the ugliest fishing pole I've ever seen in my life.
I wish they made those in black. We'd sell four times as many. But what this all comes down to is there's a lot of different rods. They're made for a lot of different uses. Sometimes we use them for uses that they weren't originally intended for, and they work fine for some of that stuff. But until you start putting these rods in your hand, you're not going to get any kind of feel for it. If you're going by other people's recommendations or by what the advertisements say, or this one says graphite, I had one that said graphite and it felt great, this one must feel great. You can't go by any of the numbers, anything printed on it. Those are all imaginary things that somebody just came up with. You really need to put the things in your hand and get a feel for them. That's the way to do it.
Na, 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 na.
I'm not singing. I'm not doing it.
All right. You can get us out of this, Josh.
Well, I guess I could. I really don't know what you want me to say, though. So I'm just going to leave it up to you this time.
All right, boys and girls. We appreciate you listening. There'll be more shows. Sometimes, thank goodness, you can go fast forward on a podcast. So anyway, it's been wonderful. It's been real. It's been fun. It's been everything you could think of. Fish and Frank here, the chair, Josh in the chair across from me. And we'll see you next week, boys and girls. Lots of stuff. Remember, tent sale, big time tent sale this year. Close to 50 vendors. Gotta come see us.
Take down your fishing pole and meet me at the fishing hole. We may not get a bite all day, but don't you rush away. What a great place to rest your bones and mighty fine for skipping stones. You feel fresh as a lemonade setting in the shade. Whether it's hot, whether it's cool, oh, what a spot for whistling like a fool. What a fine day to take a stroll and wander by the fishing hole. I can't think of a better way to pass the time of day.